Creative Male Aging, a radio and internet project in which we explore and challenge many of the conventions around aging and look particularly at new options for today's older men. I'm Tony Ryan. Welcome to the program.
If a retirement community is going to be truly welcoming of men, it needs to properly appreciate their experience of needing to remain physically and meaningfully active. There is going to need to be activities that are not, you know, trivial and demeaning, but that show some respect for an affirmation of where that man has come from, what his history's been, and that can make meaning for him in that context and provide for him to achieve the best possible health and well-being.
We'll hear more about retirement communities later in the program. Purpose and meaning after formal retirement are important aspects of this time of transition. From the University of New South Wales in Sydney, psychologist Dr. Joanne Earle is passionate about making retirement a positive experience for all Australians. We heard from Dr. Earle in our last program, and in this program we continue that theme of transitions. Her most recent research demonstrates the value of goal setting in retirement planning and the importance of exercising personal control in the transition to retirement. And for some, that may mean exploring options for a return to some form of work. Recently, I spoke with Dr. Joanne Earle at the studios of the Community Radio Network in Sydney. I believe the Americans have come up with the concept of encore careers. So when you retire, you then look into an encore career. Clap, clap, clap.
Sure, yeah. Well, I'd like to be clapping on that one as well. This is, I think, one of the misnomers about retirement, is that you're going to be sitting at home and doing nothing. I think that the reality is I've seen a lot of people in retirement who are busier than ever. They're busier in retirement. In fact, one of the people that I've been working with in my research came to see me because she was burnt out. She was burnt out because she was trying to do too many things when she'd retired. So I think this idea of sitting around and doing nothing is a bit of a misnomer. And I think that, you know, some people have embraced the opportunity to do the things that have been parked up for a very long time, and they're thinking about the strengths that they have and using this as an opportunity to go and do those things on their own terms. The reality in Australia is a lot of people, if they do decide to go on and work part-time, they'll first go and target their current employer. So a lot of people that do plan to go part-time will just go back to their existing employer. But there's probably, I think it's around 40% of people who go off, leave their current employer to do something new and different, even if it's part-time work. So one of the other things I think is really worthwhile is just having a look and noting late bloomers in your local communities, but also more broadly, who are taking on new and different careers. I've seen people take completely different careers on board, like being a marriage celebrant, for example. Other people have innovated new products, and this is after retirement, it's not during retirement, and become they've been a general manager and they've thought that it would be really good to be able to run their own bed and breakfast or become a caravan park manager. So they've taken the skills that they've developed in the workplace but into new and different roles. And over, you know, history, we've seen lots of people who started careers later. You know, Colonel Sanders, for example, started KFC when he was in his 60s, and Ray Kroc, who was a salesman, bought a little cafe that was run by a family called McDonald's at the age of 52. I mean, all of these people have valuable contributions to make to the community, and I can think of a couple of examples where people that I know have used retirement as a jumping off point to revisit something that they really have parked up for a long time. So one of the people that I know was originally in the Navy in signals, and he left the Navy. He joined an oil petrochemical company as an operator, and he worked his way up through the ranks in the petrochemical company he worked for. He found himself retiring in his late 50s. And then he decided from there to go off and set up his own business. He'd always been interested in antenna design. So he designed antennas, and he was working here and also offshore building antennas and selling them within Australia. And he did that for a while. He did that for nearly 20 years. And then in his late 70s, he really decided to retire. He was travelling, and then he went to work as a volunteer back with the Navy. So I think it's never too late to think about where and what you wanted to be, even as young as when you were 15, 16 years old, to think about what is it that was inspiring me at that stage of my life and what sort of career did I want to build for myself. It's never too late to go back and revisit some of those ideas. And I think where the creativity comes in is where you start to feel so fully engaged in whatever you're doing that time passes quickly. And the best way to do that is to work with your strengths, to figure out, you know, what is it about points of difference? What is it that, you know, lights your fire, keeps your engine going? And to really take a look and think about it, not just in the workplace, but outside of the workplace, what sort of things are you doing? You're volunteering for? What are friends coming to you for advice for? One of the people that I worked with once was thinking about what they were going to be doing when they retired, and we had a look at the sort of strengths that he had, and one of his strengths was harmony. He was good at maintaining harmonious relationships in the workplace. And I said to him, is this something that you've noticed in the workplace? Do people often come to you to sort out conflicts? And he said, well, not so much conflicts, he said, but they'll often bring me in to facilitate meetings. What he was really describing was mediation. And then I said to him, so what's the best example you can give me of that? And he said, well, my brother and my sister-in-law recently got divorced, and they asked me to sit on a conversation with them to help determine the distribution of property. And I sat there and I thought to myself, there's a man who must have a real strength, because what woman in her right mind would put all of her worldly assets in the hand of her brother-in-law if she didn't honestly believe that he was a man who could keep a very fair and equitable attitude and maintain that sort of that mediation role? So anyway, he ended up retraining to be a mediator. That was his new encore career, if you like.
A very creative retirement.
Yeah, that's right. I think, and creativity is really, I think, about thinking differently about things. People think sometimes about creativity as, you know, artistic in sort of its endeavour, and I think it's certainly not just about articulating it in word or picture. It's really about doing things differently than you've done before, and maybe taking, you know, a left-hand turn, even if it's quite different to what you've been doing previously. But if you don't do it, you'll feel like it's been left undone.
Dr. Joanne Earle from the University of New South Wales. And on our website, you will find a link to a YouTube presentation by Dr. Earle on this very topic of retirement planning. That link is on our website, creativemaleaging.com, creativemaleaging.com. While there would seem to be many negative stereotypes about older people, as we've just heard, the reality is often quite different. Professor Bryony Dow is Director of the National Ageing Research Institute in Melbourne and also National President of the Australian Association of Gerontology. I spoke recently with Professor Dow in Melbourne.
Yeah, so there are a lot of negative stereotypes about older people generally, and I think that that's not helped by the idea that that we have increasing dependency ratios, where younger generations are going to have to pay taxes in order to fund the retirement of older generations. That's the sort of stereotypical view we hear in the media. Whereas in actual fact, older people are working more in ever-increasing numbers. They're paying taxes, they're self-funded retirees, and they're also contributing, as I said before, as carers and as volunteers and by their creative energy. We talked to some older people recently about what they saw as productive ageing, because we were actually interested in their definition of it rather than just the economic definition. And it was amazing to find how much creativity, I guess, they were still exercising in their later years, whether that be for older men, as one of older man we met was 94, and he was the handyman in his family. He was still going around in his hard yakka shorts doing all the work for the family. But other examples were where people felt that just by keeping their own minds occupied by learning a language, learning a musical instrument, or teaching those things, they were actually constructively contributing to society as a whole.
We'll hear more from Professor Bryony Dow shortly. But first, psychotherapist Dr. John Ashfield reflects on a significant financial issue that can sometimes face older people.
An issue that probably needs to be given some airing and consideration is the one of how people in later life should and could use their financial resources. Now, obviously, people need to have sufficient income to be able to live and care for themselves comfortably. But what about the other resources that may be surplus to requirements, that is, the immediate requirements of daily living, that could be used for embarking on an adventure or doing something new and different, travelling? But then, of course, we confront the issue of the entitlements and expectations of children. Now, though this, I'm sure, varies from culture to culture within Australia and family to family, in general, one could say that there is probably a fairly strong expectation that parents will leave some sort of inheritance to their children. Now, is that reasonable if they've been well educated, if they're living in a society that cares quite well for people even when they're incapacitated or without an income for whatever reason? Should children be able to continue or be permitted to continue to have a sense of entitlement when it comes to their parents' money? The contrary argument could be made that, in fact, they've been raised, and when they get to an age, a certain age, they're no longer the biological responsibility of their parents. Should not the parents be able to cut loose, use what additional resources they've got beyond what they need to live comfortably, and get on with living their life as fully as they possibly can until it comes to a close? That's something I think that isn't talked about enough, but needs to be.
So many children have great expectations.
Well, I think great expectations, but I think sometimes they postpone taking responsibility for their lives and putting an effort into saving and you know, building their own financial resources because of an expectation that they'll inherit from their parents, whether it's money or a house or a business, for example. But the argument could be made, And I think that older people need to be thinking about this perhaps more liberally, that those monies were earned by them, and indeed they should have the liberty to use them as they see fit.
On the Community Radio Network around Australia, you're listening to Creative Male Ageing, a series of 12 programs in which we challenge the stereotypes and explore new options for today's older men. Today we're continuing the theme of transitions, now on some financial matters, including what is known as financial abuse, and then some perspectives on men in residential communities. Here again is Professor Bryony Dow.
Well, elder abuse, we think, occurs to, or happens to, about 1 in 20 older people in any year. We don't know for sure because there's never been a prevalent study in Australia, and also it tends to be a fairly hidden issue. The most common form of elder abuse is financial abuse. Well, I guess the most sort of common scenario is where an adult child moves back in with their parent, maybe due to drug problems, alcohol problems, or because they've broken up with their spouse, and then just starts to sort of gradually get the older person to pay for their drugs and bills and so on and so forth. Older men, I think, are probably at risk in that they can be more socially isolated. In that scenario, the younger person also isolates the older person. So they stop them from seeing their friends, they might stop them from seeing their doctor and so forth. And that, it's possible that older men are more at risk of that social abuse and social isolation, which serves to hide other forms of abuse.
I think some of our listeners may in fact be a bit surprised to hear of social isolation, social abuse. That's a new one to some people, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense when you think about it, though, that if you actually stop people from seeing their friends and neighbours and so on and so forth, that you can actually hide other forms of abuse. And sometimes it even goes as far as stopping them from having medical treatment and that sort of thing, stopping them from getting services, and links in with neglect as well as psychological and other abuse.
What can be done about this?
The main approach that we take in Australia is an empowerment approach rather than a protective approach, if you like. So what the idea is that we let older people know what their choices are. It's complex because if it's a son or a daughter, the father or mother loves that child and so may not necessarily want to see them get into trouble, but they do want the abuse to stop. So most of the services get the older person to understand that they've got choices, that they can get legal assistance, that there are services that they can have, that there are things that they can do short of charging their child with a crime.
Professor Bryony Dale, with some first thoughts on older men and residential communities, here is Melbourne-based Dr. Don Edgar, former director of the Institute of Family Studies.
There's also the issue of where do you live, say 65 retirement. There may be health problems, there may be physical tiredness and so on. There's also then the pressure of, do we really need this big house with the big garden? So let's look at moving into an apartment or a retirement village or home. I once did a consultancy for Beckton and they showed me their huge retirement village out Brighton Way, and that ranged from small separate houses with a couple of bedrooms and kitchen and even garden, a bit of a backyard and so on, to apartments that were serviced, to smaller places. There were medical facilities available. It looked terrific. But as I walked around that place, I was thinking, if I were here, what would I do? And they showed me units where there was a room for the wife to do her flowers or her needlework or whatever. And in the end, I said to them, where's the bloody shed? And I know that's a major issue. I mean, most men of my generation certainly have had a bit of a garden to relax in, tools to do repairs. That was the male role. You fix things, you put the light bulbs in, you climb the ladder and prune the vines or whatever. And suddenly you've got nowhere even to put a hammer and nails. That's a bit of a shock too, and I think the planners of those retirement villages are now much more aware of it because there's been a lot written, of course, as you know, about men's sheds. Maybe he wants to fix a motorbike or fiddle with the engine of a car or something, and that just wasn't there.
When we're talking about the issue of male retirement, we're importantly talking about the kind of environments that males will be experiencing that retirement in.
South Australian psychotherapist Dr. John Ashfield, who begins with a rather sardonic reflection on a not-so-helpful approach by one retirement community to older male residents.
And we could talk about built environments, natural environments, but just for a moment, let's focus on the new phenomenon of retirement communities, which is, a new corporate phenomenon. And because we really need to question just whether there is any genuineness at all in their attempts to accommodate the particular needs of men and, to consider just how they might experience optimal health and well-being in such environments. What I'd like to do is quote from the newsletter from one of these corporate retirement community firms. And here is what they have to say, which I think is particularly suspect. They say this: the increase in male longevity presents a real opportunity for communities to change marketing tactics and initiatives that will appeal to and target the male prospect. That's seriously worrying, I would have thought. Refresh your model apartments, they say, to make them more gender neutral, re-examine your ad campaigns to include men and host an event or two tailored specifically for men. Sounds a little tokenistic to me, but shall we read on? It's important for the marketing and sales department to work in conjunction with the life enrichment department. Goodness only knows what that means. Programming offered to the male residents can often be leveraged and utilised when attracting male prospects as well. Well, good advice to the industry by the sounds of it, but seriously worrying if I was a candidate for living in one of these retirement communities as a male in particular. Perhaps we can just read on a little. Another great starting point is developing a men's only group. They can meet for coffee, talk sports, go on outings and volunteer in community outreach together. Let them take the leadership on developing the culture they'd like to see on campus. When we think of therapeutic environments, is there a space you can develop into a man cave for guys to hang out, watch the game and talk freely? I think what I've just been reading is quite obviously the antithesis of creative male ageing. And I think it's quite bewildering in its naivety and lack of appreciation for men's experience in making the transition from an active working life to one that must accept care and accept living in an environment that very often doesn't cater to his needs at all. If they're to be summarised so simply and naively, I think that many men are heading into a space, a context in which they're going to be quite unhappy and in which that unhappiness will have a deleterious effect on their health. So let's flip that around and think about it positively. If a retirement community is going to be truly welcoming of men, it needs to properly appreciate their experience of needing to remain physically and meaningfully active. There is going to need to be activities that are not, you know, trivial and demeaning, but that show some respect for an affirmation of where that man has come from, what his history's been, and that can make meaning for him in that context and provide for him to achieve the best possible health and well-being.
It's more than grandfather clocks and potted palms and carpets.
Yes, yes, indeed. And, I mean, in my case, I'd always been interested in gardening was always a form of relaxation. So I would have hated to be in a place where there was no form of garden, not even a sort of balcony with pots and plants and so on. I think it is a problem for men having been so task-oriented that there are other things that are more challenging, interesting, intuitive. Now, if you've got some background in music or in art or in writing, I mean, I've got one friend who writes poetry, haiku, and that's been a really great hobby for him. No particular purpose, he just enjoys doing it, and that's very hard for men to get used to. I was once told by a counsellor at the family court that men needed to do something that gave them satisfaction in its own right, not something that they were achieving, not for purposes of public consumption or showing to everybody else. And I think for a lot of men, including myself, that's pretty hard. They think if I go and learn the guitar, then I've got to be able to play concert guitar. Or if I paint, I've got to do a painting that is great and can hang in exhibitions. And, of course, that defeats the purpose of it. They're not used to doing something just for the pleasure of it. That's, I think, where I perhaps envy men who are into sport, even golfing, athletics or whatever, because they get a joy just out of doing it, not necessarily being the greatest football player or the greatest tennis player or the greatest swimmer, but learning to develop their body and trying things out. And I think we need to have some way of encouraging men to develop hobbies before they face that dilemma. You know, outside work, there needs to be a time, a chance, classes through adult education. I mean, you've got the U3A groups everywhere, but they're so often oriented to women because it's the women who have had the time to go to those classes and have diverse interests. That's largely also because our education system, our schools, push boys into studying for a job. There's always a job at the end of it. It's not learning for the sake of learning or doing for the sake of doing, that they perhaps have fewer hobbies. I mean, when I was growing up, I had three brothers and two sisters, and we all had hobbies. One of them made model aeroplanes, and that involved design, drawing, cutting, manipulating, gluing, you know, a whole range of things. But he also drew, you know, he painted pictures of these things. And so it was instrumental to make something that would fly, but it was a fantastic hobby. The other one was more involved in sports, tennis, and that sort of thing, but that remained as something that he could do all through his life, and more so when he's, quote, retired. In my case, you know, the painting, I played the violin from the time I was very young and was in orchestras when I was at school and in orchestras at Geelong, where I taught for some time. And that I would like to have kept up, but your hands get a bit stiff, arthritis comes in, and the violin has to be played well to be listened to at all. So I don't do that anymore.
Dr. Don Edgar in Melbourne, and before him, Dr. John Ashfield in South Australia. Today in Creative Male Ageing, we've been looking at some further aspects of retirement planning. You also heard from Dr. Joanne Earle in Sydney and Professor Bryony Dow in Melbourne. The project consultant for Creative Male Ageing is South Australian-based psychotherapist, author and educator, Dr. John Ashfield. And a reminder that our website again is creativemaleaging.com. That's creativemaleaging.com. This Creative Male Ageing project was made possible with assistance from the Office for the Ageing, Department of Health, the Government of South Australia. From PBAFM in Adelaide, South Australia, I'm Tony Ryan. Till next time, go well.